Peter Thomas Fornital here, recording a new spot for our founding partner, the Thoroughbred Retirement Foundation. So proud to work with these guys for more than a year now. They do amazing work. We as horse players know it's important to give back to the athletes who are at the center of this sport. There's no sport without the horses. We want to support them when their racing days are done. Thoroughbred Retirement Foundation makes that work happen, and we want to give to them. And the best way to do so is through our custom URL, trfinc.org/players. If you have a big hit because of this show, or even not because of this show, and you're feeling generous, head over there, trfinc.org/players, and make a gift and let them know we sent you. That URL one more time, trfinc.org/players. Hello and welcome to the In the Money Players Podcast. I'm your host, Peter Thomas Fornital, back with you in the Brooklyn Bunker once again, shaking the Vegas off me and getting ready for a fun weekend. Actually going to head up to Saratoga with the family, which should be a lot of fun. Happy Valentine's Day to everybody out there. This is our special Valentine's Day edition, and we do have a special show. We've got a trio of guests. We're going to start off with an old favorite. We'll get to him in a minute. Then we're going to have a drop by from our friend Kim Weir from the Thoroughbred Retirement Foundation. And then to close out the show, I'm going to hand off the reins to our correspondent, Naomi Tucker, who's going to have a really cool chat with Sheldon Russell about his life and career and a tip for Maryland this weekend. It should be fun. You're definitely going to want to stick around for that. But as I mentioned, we're going to start this one off with an old friend. All right, folks, you've asked for him, you got him. The man, the myth, the legend, coming to us from the fairgrounds. It's Frank McGowey. What's up, Frank?
Hey, Pete, how are you? You got perfect timing. They just closed for the renovation break. Came out to see some of these horses, so you're right on time.
I love it. That's very good to hear. So remind me your buddy's name who came up to me to say hi at the NHC. He even put the phone in my face at one point. I got to say a few words to you while I was on air with Steve Bick, which was pretty hilarious.
What's that? That was Sammy Toops. He's a piece of work. He needs a lip chain. No, about it. Yeah, he's a real character.
Is he one of the guys? Did he come and visit in Saratoga at some point? He seemed familiar to me.
I don't think he's been to Saratoga. He is just an old school guy. I mean, he's been going to the races. I've been knowing him for 30 years. You know, he's into it. Like, you know, it's part of his life. And he won a spot up there at the NHC. It was the first time he had made it to the NHC, so he was all pumped up.
That's great.
I actually talked to him yesterday, and he's sick as a dog in bed with the flu.
You know, there's a few of them like that. Marshall Graham told me it's about as sick as he's ever been, and right. I think I've managed to fight it off, but there's been something up with me. I've been getting out of bed like close to 9 a.m., which never happens. I'm more likely to be up at 4 than 9. And I think right. It's just the body fighting off whatever was going around out there.
Oh, yeah, you kill yourself. I mean, that's a grind, being in that tournament. That is a total grind.
Did you miss not being there? Any regrets?
I missed not being there until the 40-1 shot won the last mandatory at Golden Gate. And then I said, I'm glad I'm not there.
Yeah, that's a rule they're going to look at. I wrote a piece, actually, for the Brissette Betting Guide about it.
I read something. I read that letter that Tony Zhao did, and yes. You know, Tony, he was a guy that they paired me up with on the pilot.
The World Horse Players Tour, yes.
Right, and he was, I mean, that was really interesting, the way he broke it down and analyzed it. Made a lot of sense.
Yes, certainly.
So, yeah, there's some changes need to be made.
Yeah, the long shots have an outsized value, but my big problem is just when you have those mandatory races so late, there's zero handicapping. All you have to do at that point, if you're far enough back, is be able to count to 20. And if you just move them earlier in the day and had more than half the races left, people would, you know, they'd want to wait and take their shots elsewhere potentially, and it wouldn't, you wouldn't just be picking these long shots by rote. So I think they'll look at it and change it.
Totally different mindset playing in a contest like that than playing every day. At least for me, it is. And when I'm doing a contest like that, I really don't bet. I find it best not to bet, because it just throws me off. I mean, it's a different beast.
That's right.
Those winning place contests.
You're flexing different muscles. Now, I know a lot of people who still fire away anyway, and I get it, especially if gambling is an important part of your income. You can't afford not to. But whereas there's a lot of contest players who will be firing while playing in contest, if it's live bank or during the week. But at the NHC specifically, there's just, for me, it would be one ball in the air too many.
Yep, that's how it is with me. I can't do it. I mean, I've watched Paul and Duke and those guys do it, and you know, they got 20 things going on at once. I don't know how they do it.
Well, I think part of the reason those guys do so well in the tournament is it's not all that different from their day-to-day to be looking
Correct.
At six tracks and making all these bets, right? I mean, for most of us, for me, I detest playing two tracks at once. I really want to be focused on one. Yeah. But if you've got that club in your bag, it's another story.
I actually think that there's, and I've given this some thought too, I think there's a lot of value to not being locked into any horses going into those contests. Maybe, you know, do an overview, but don't make any final decisions to the day of or right before the race till you had a chance to look at the odds, stuff like that. Where it's totally opposite with me when I'm, you know, betting day to day. Like this morning I was looking at Sunday's card and, you know, trying to get an idea in advance of who I'm going to be liking on Sunday, things I might be doing. But in those contests, I really think you're better off going in with all your info and just going race by race and wherever the best opportunity is, taking advantage of it.
You have to be nimble, I think, if you want to dance at the NHC. That sounds about right to me. You can't have too many preconceived notions. How's your meet been going at Fairgrounds? What do you have to report?
Fairgrounds has been good. We've been grinding it out. You know, you don't have that many opportunities with a lot of races coming off the turf and stuff like that. We've had some weather issues down here. But overall, it's been positive. And this is the time of year down here when horses have cycled a couple of times, and I should have a pretty good line on them. So I'm looking to generate a profit each week.
Any Rumplemints nights so far this meet?
I've been behaving myself. I went. I actually stopped by Wednesday, and I had one or two. And I actually I ran into a friend of mine's son, who we started talking about a story about the old days out here. And if you want, I'll tell you the story real quick. It was one of the first times I realized how valuable having information that wasn't available to the public was. They used to run training races here back in the late 80s or early 90s. And I used to come out here with a group of older guys that had kind of cut my teeth learning handicapping and learning the life around a racetrack from. And they would put out a sheet that had the name of the horse and the trainer and the age. And that was it. And you had an idea of who they were, but you didn't know who the jockey was going to be. It could be an exercise rider. It could be a jockey. But the horse would come over to the paddock already under tack, and they'd give him a little schooling in the paddock, and they'd go out and run these races. And one day, there was this guy, a trainer named Jose Fernandez. I had never seen his name. He wasn't stabled here. And these two Mexican guys bring this horse over here, and one of them was the exercise rider. And he literally won this training race by an eighth of a mile. And so we go down to the rail when they're coming back, and we're trying to, you know, get an idea. Who is this guy? We, you know, when's it, we've never seen this. What's going on? And we said, when's this horse running? And the groom turns around and he said, he no run here. So luckily, one of the guys in our group, he was a, we'll call him a short-term investment broker. He wanted to invest in something, nine innings, four quarters, two halves, six furlongs. He was your guy, right? And he had a contact in Vegas. I mean, there was no internet back then. You didn't have entries. The only entries you got were when the racing form came out, the tracks that were in your racing form. So he had a friend in Vegas scouring the entries, and he and his wife worked for Delta Airlines. And about 2 months later, his buddy in Vegas calls him and says, he's in at Hollywood Park. And so he called all of us, and he collected some money, or he didn't collect money. He just said, what do you want to bet? I'm flying out there. And he made it out there. The horse was in the second half of the double. His name was Inner Peace, I-N-N-E-R-P-E-A-C-E. And you can check this out if you can pull these charts up. He was the only horse the entire meet at Hollywood Park that won sprinting from the one hole. He paid $76.
There had to be some rumple mints that night.
Oh, well, no, I wasn't introduced to those yet, but we had a lot of fun, a lot of fun.
So, oh, that's
fabulous. When I realized there was a lot of value at being the racetrack in the morning.
Oh, no doubt about it. I'm seeing an Inner Peace here from 1988. I'm guessing this is the one by Seattle
Slew. Jose Fernandez.
Let's take a look. I'm clicking on the Equibase site, and we're looking to see. Jose Fernandez. Lafitte Pinkai was the jockey. Let's see. It was the debut race. I can click and I can get the chart here. Oh, let's see what it says. Inner Peace was 34.90 to 1.
Okay. And I think he ran back on the turf in the second start. We bet on him again. He paid like $26.
Let's see. I've got it here. The horse ran four times, winning the first two. And I'm just pulling up the second race now. And it was dirt again, but 11 to 1.
It was 11 to 1. Yeah. So, okay.
Your memory is pretty good though. That's not too far off.
People got stacked up pretty good around here. So, you know, it's funny about the memory. My brain is filled with all these horse racing memories, but I go places with my wife, she goes, you don't remember we met these people? And I'm going, no. But here I am talking about a race from 1988 like it was yesterday.
Oh, that's tremendous.
Filled up with crazy information.
Yeah, that's the thing. Our brains get full. Fold in 88, so 91 was the race. So it's not quite that long ago, but still, I'm very, very impressed. I know things that I remember, even from horses I owned. I'll go back and, you get – the memory plays these funny tricks on you sometimes where you get, like, indignant about it, and I'll be like, no, that's not when that was, and here I am reading the chart, and it's – then eventually I accept, okay, I'm clearly misremembering this. We didn't,
there you go.
Yeah, we didn't run at Radnor that day. It was, you know, wherever.
So Wednesday night I ran into the son of the short-term investment broker.
Yes.
And we were talking about that story. It was pretty funny.
That's great. It's you got quite a crew down there at Fairgrounds.
Yes, we do.
How will you spend the racing day on Saturday? Will you be out at the track for that, or do you do that for more of an office setting?
I'll go out. So it's a 13 race card. I'll spend I'm only live 5 or 10 minutes from the track. So I'll spend the first half of the card. I'll be at home. I'll get an idea of how the track's playing and you know, just get some things done. And then I'm coming out I want to see these horses in the flesh, you know, the big races. And so I'll come out and I'll hang out down in the paddock, get a chance to see them, just, you know, roam around.
Well, we're going to pick your brain a little bit here. You're kind enough to have agreed to mark our cards for these graded stakes. There are 5 of them. It starts off with race number 9. It's the Grade 3 Mineshaft. Understanding that your opinion could change between now and then from something you see in the paddock and whatnot. Curious where you stand at this point. Some very familiar runners in here with the likes of Silver Dust and Hofberg. Where are you looking as of now in the Mineshaft?
My mind won't change on this one, especially not after seeing Hofberg this morning. He was out first. And he looked fantastic. And Silver Dust has looked fantastic the whole meet and just looks great. The only slight hesitation I have with Silver Dust is that Jack Gilligan, who has been riding him, and he doesn't ride that much for the Calhoun Barn, but he rides that horse because that horse had been in the past a little quirky, and he really got along with him. But I think he's gotten better this year about being so quirky. So Brian has been on him and worked him and, he should fit him. And if you know, nothing out of the ordinary happens, him and Hofberg, I mean, they just tower over that bunch. I hear that Blended Citizen is coming out for the race.
Oh, that's good information.
Yeah. And then I just don't think the Russ match up here. I mean, it's I'm not giving you anything great here, but yeah, they look like they tower over the field.
Hey.
I saw Cutting Humor on the track today. He looked good. Just, you know, galloping, but he didn't look as good as those other two. They're coming out of the skin, Gunnett and Hoffberg.
And there should be plenty of pace.
Not Gunnett and Hoffberg. I'm sorry, Silver Dust and Hoffberg.
There should be plenty of pace to set up a late run for Hoffberg.
Absolutely.
And then Silver Dust should get a nice trip in behind the main speed, I would think. So
he got a really comfortable trip the other day. And normally I would discount that kind of trip, but he didn't need that kind of trip. He just got it because he's got tactical speed and it was a short field and he was able to do whatever he wanted with it. He can rate in here and I think he'll get a really nice trip.
I think that's a good point. A lot of trip handicappers, I think, sometimes fall into the trap of being against every horse that has a perfect trip and not acknowledging that it's a skill to be able to make your own perfect trip through tactical speed and handleability, essentially.
Yep, no doubt about it.
Now, Hoffberg,
that's probably the biggest, best weapon in horse racing is tactical speed.
Yeah, I would agree.
And always get your position going forward in a race, which is key to me.
Hoffberg has not always had that. However, in his recent races, has shown the ability to be a little bit closer and not too worried about it here because of the aforementioned pace, even if he is a little slow to get away from there. It feels like he should be able to run through the lane. And doesn't it feel like Fairgrounds will suit him?
He's going to love this stretch.
Yeah.
Love this stretch.
Well, I'd love to see it. I've been a fan for a long time, and, you know, he's a horse that many people have said I've maybe been too much of a fan of. But I think he could do some good things this year, and maybe it'll all start off in the mineshaft on Saturday.
Right, and this is probably a lighter field than he's been facing for the most part.
Yeah, I would agree. I would agree. I mean, it really does seem on paper, especially if Blended Citizen's going to come out, that it's those two. That you can get your play in your picks and whatnot. Do you see yourself playing this race individually or just a race you'll mess around in picks?
If I do, it'll just be a cold box, those two, and maybe some tries. You know, I got to use my old buddy, Mocito Rojo, one of the coolest horses around, $10,000 claim in his first start. He's right on the brink of making $1 million. But him and Gunnett look like logical underneath horses to me. But nothing fancy yet, if I'm making some tries.
Let's move on to race number 10, Frank. It is the Fairgrounds Grade 3 going 1 1/8 on the turf for four-year-olds and up. Big full field in this one. Some familiar names, including Synchrony. But I'm curious where you landed.
So this is one of the things that I'll be paying attention to early in the card. The rails are out at 25 feet today on the turf course, but they're coming down after the racing today. And the last big weekend we had here, which was LeCompte's weekend, they had the rails down, and you really needed to be inside to have any shot on this turf course. Hopefully, the turf course is playing a little fairer, and if it is, I'll be looking to spread out against some horses that were kind of in the favor of how the turf course was playing last time. Don't blame Rocket, who won the turf stake on LeCompte weekend, could not have gotten a better trip. Sailing Solo and Fact of This went out dueling, and he sat about 4 lengths off of him by himself with not another horse around him. I mean, it was the most perfect trip he could ever get. He can't get that trip. So he's got I'm discounting that performance. Synchrony has looked good training. He won this race last year, but he hadn't wowed me. I don't know if he might need one coming off the bench. He has not blown me away like he did. I was interested in a couple of outside horses if the track is playing fairly, and one of them is Captivating Moon, who I think maybe just had a little bit too much to do last time, was a little too far back, and hopefully Brian learned something from that and had him a little closer. I thought he finished up real good. And the other one is The Great Day, all the way out in the 14 hole. I think you can draw a line through his dirt race at Keeneland. And he had a legit excuse in his race at Laurel last year. I remember seeing that. He was blocked behind a wall. And then he ran solid at Arlington. And I think he fits with these. He's going to be a big price. And you know, if Nacho Correa is coming in, I think that horse is worth a look at big odds.
You trust Lannery to get some kind of trip from out there if the track is playing fair?
Yeah. I mean, he's not the type to rush a horse. He's going to try to tuck in and save some ground. But I mean, listen, if it's playing, if the course is playing like it did LeComp weekend, he's really up against it, and I probably won't be on him. But you'll know by then. We have enough. I think the first race of the day is a turf race, and the fourth race is a turf race. So you'll know how the course is playing by then.
I like it. Let's talk about race number 11, which is the Grade 2, Rachel Alexandra, mile and a 16th on the dirt. On paper, it sure looks like a match between the 2-year-old filly champion, British Idiom, and Finite, who we've spent a lot of time talking about on this show. Is it as simple as those two, Frank, or can you get creative here?
I think British Idiom is probably the horse to beat. Finite is really cool, and it wouldn't shock me if she wins. She just keeps eking it out. I don't know how much further than a mile and 16th she really wants to go. But I think British Idiom has looked really good in the mornings here. And I think she's ready, she's the horse to beat. I was looking to, I'm not getting fancy here, but both McPeak horses coming in look like they'll improve stretching out to me. And I thought they were both worth a look at a price. Swiss Skydiver and Impeccable Style.
Do you think they can win, or they're ones that you'd put with British Idiom?
Well, because British Idiom's coming off the bench, I will use them in some multi-race gimmicks, in the top spot, just in case she might need one, a tightener. And they're both, coming into this with Swiss Skyvers coming out of the race at Tampa, and she should get a really good trip with Brian. And Brian's kind of been McPeak's go-to rider down here. Wouldn't surprise me if he really gets a nice trip down there, and could surprise if Finite or British Idiom, don't run their best.
From having clapped eyes on British Idiom recently, how far do you think she is going to want to go eventually?
I don't know if mile and eighth will be a best. I think she's probably, mile and 16th is probably best for her. If she gets better going further. We'll see, though. I mean,
Brad Cox,
when we start finding it out.
Yeah, Cox has talked about that his theory, and this feels like a theory for a lot of modern trainers, is you look for horses that are going to probably, you're just looking at them, looking at their pedigree, you'd say their best is a mile, and then you try to train them to get the rest of it. And we've seen it work in a number of instances, even in races like the Kentucky Derby. So I certainly wouldn't put it past Brad Cox. But yeah,
he knows what he's doing. He did it. He's done it before with Monomoy Girl. Yeah. So he definitely knows what he's doing.
I'm excited to see her come back and run. I'm a big fan, and this race
she's
is cool.
Doing well.
Yeah, that's excellent. Good. That's good. Very, very good to hear. All right, so we've got the Risen Star up next. It's split this year. We've got it as the 12th and the 13th. I know you've been following this division closely. Folks interested in a little extra work might want to go back and find the Red Board Rewind appearance that Frank did, where he went over the LeCompte in great detail. That was a really fun moment of broadcasting for me this year. But now that we have the composition of these two fields, I can't wait to hear where you're going to go. We'll start off with Race 12, the first division of the Risen Star, going a mile and an eighth on the dirt for 3-year-olds, of course. Where did you land, Frank?
So I think it's important to note that this is being run at a mile and an eighth this year.
Yep.
Because in the past, the Risen Star was always run at a mile and a 16th. But now that since we stretched out the Louisiana Derby to a mile and 3/16, they moved this back to a mile and an eighth. So whenever a race is at a mile and an eighth for 3-year-olds this time of year, I think it's really important to figure out who's going to want that extra distance. And the last time we talked, I remember telling you that after seeing Enforceable in the paddock that day, the day of the LeCompte, he looked like a horse that had some more room to grow. Yeah. And from what I've seen, he looks like he's filled out more, and he's going to love the mile and eighth. I don't know if anybody gets a chance to go back and watch the LeCompte. He really galloped out strong. And look like he wanted to go further. And so, I mean, I really don't see with the setup he's going to get in this race. I'll be shocked if he's not 1-2 in this race the way he's been going. He's only got two easy half-mile works since that last race. But to me, that's really positive. I saw one of them, and it was great. And he just, you know, relaxed early, finished the way you want him to finish, and then galloped out really well. I mean, the best part of the whole work might have been after the wire. And he's doing good, and he's going to love the Mountaineer. So to me, he's another one like Hoffberg that'll have a lot of room to come down this long stretch and find a spot to do their best running. And once they turn loose, I think they'll be hard to hold off.
I wanted to ask you your opinion of the allowance race on January 18th that sends two runners to this spot in Digital and Blackberry Wine. I know the figure came back strong. I was a little attracted to one of them, probably Digital between the pair, to maybe spring an upset here, though I am a little bit concerned about the distance based on pedigree for Digital. But what do you think?
So I had the race 8-1. In my mind, Digital is the horse that I was looking at. It was kind of funny because it almost kind of turned into a match race.
Yeah,
that race, Digital he turned it on and went past Blackberry Wine, and then it almost looked like he kind of got lost on the lead a little bit. And I know he's been training really well, and I think he'll mentally take a step forward in this race. And Brian is not going to rush him from the rail. He's going to get a great trip down there. Yes, out of the two of those, he and Blackberry won, I definitely prefer him. And that's exactly how I had the race. And because that post will benefit him. Silver State, on the other hand, I'm not sure if that's a great post for him. He's a pretty big horse, and he's going to have to maneuver some traffic to get outside and do his running. He may be a little bit compromised by a trip. Not that, you know, Santana is certainly capable of working out something, but I would think with a horse like that, you would prefer to be a little more towards the middle of the field than down on a rail.
Very interesting. So you like Enforceable and Digital there. I'm with you on both of those, especially Digital. And I think the reason that I really prefer Digital to Blackberry Wine, even though Blackberry Wine did come back on him last time, is just that was just Digital's third career start. So in addition to probably having the better draw here today, I just feel like there's more scope and room for improvement.
Yeah, the exact comment I put on his race was okay first route, that, you know, it was a good experience for him, and he's gonna benefit and move forward off of it.
All right, let's move on to the nightcap at the fairgrounds on Saturday. It's race 13, the second division of the Risen Star. We've got an invader coming in here, Frank, who's got the best figures and the best form by a lot in Anno d'Or, coming from that second to 1,000 Words, who, of course, came back to show that race was no fluke. And then, of course, the Breeders' Cup Juvenile as well. Can anybody beat this horse?
You know, not if he runs his best, it doesn't look like, based on his numbers. It looks like it would be pretty much of a stretch for anybody to jump up and improve that much. But I guess the real question you have to ask is, how ready is he to run his best effort? And because obviously tomorrow's not the goal for him. But I would think, it looks like he's been working at Golden Gate pretty regularly. I haven't had a chance to see him. I was hoping he didn't come out this morning, I don't think, before the break. So maybe I'll see him after the break and see how he looks. I think I caught a glimpse of him the other day, and he looked pretty good going past, but I wanted to see more. But, yeah, he clearly looks like the horse to beat. And I'm interested to see how the race unfolds. I was looking to try to get cute with a price horse in here that I think is going to move forward again. And try to get in a number, and that's Mr. Big News, the Calhoun horse, who looks a little light on numbers, but in my mind took a real step forward the other day and looks like a horse that's getting better, and he will love the Mountaineer, being by Giant's Causeway out of a Galileo mare.
Sure.
And the horse is doing well. So the three numbers I had written down for the race, Anador on top, Mr. Big News, and Modernist underneath. And I think that's the way I'm probably going to be playing it. I wasn't interested in many of the speed horses here. New York traffic was good the other day at Gulfstream, but I tend to discount some Gulfstream performances until they prove it elsewhere. And he drew the 12 hole. I don't think that's great. And unless Castellano can pull off one of those Catholic boy rides, you know, where he just saws off the field and gets comfortable. If he does, maybe he'll have a shot. But I wouldn't be looking to go crazy from that post just off that one Gulfstream race.
Looking a little more at Mr. Big News, this is one I'm going to just go right ahead and plop in the stable mail for turf, because when a horse can show the toughness to win on dirt and has blood like Giant's Causeway out of a Galileo mare, you would think the move up will be there on the green stuff. In American Racing, it makes sense to take him as far as you can on the dirt before making that switch over. But
oh, sure.
This is one.
And if you go back and look at his last race, he had a wide trip, and Alvarado got him outside around the eighth pole, and a Brad Cox horse had a pretty significant lead on him, even at the 16th pole. And Alvarado just like pointed him at him, and he saw his target and just lunged at him. And then he nailed him on the wire and galloped out strong. It was really impressive.
Sounds like a pretty cool horse.
And I think he will take a step forward tomorrow for sure.
I love that idea. 20-1. From Frank, do me a favor. You're not a social media guy, but if you see an Odor after the break and have any thoughts that you feel like sharing with the listeners, text me. I'll put it up on Twitter so folks can follow along. I appreciate that very much. I should let you get back there, huh? They're probably about to come out.
Yep, they're cleaning up. They're cleaning up right now. The tractors are pulling off.
We got our story as a tangent, so you're off the hook. Unless you had something else prepared, you can save it for next time.
No, we'll save it for next time. Hopefully we'll have a story tomorrow. How's that?
I love it. Frank McGoey, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you so much, Frank. Godspeed tomorrow.
All right, brother. Take care. Everybody, good luck.
And now I'd like to welcome back to the In the Money airwaves, the first lady of the In the Money Players podcast from the Thoroughbred Retirement Foundation. It's Kim Weir. Kim, how are you today?
Oh, my gosh. Well, happy Valentine's Day, Pete. I am now blushing at that high praise. Well, you've made my day.
Excellent. We were thinking of you a lot out in Las Vegas, a lot of players talking about the TRF and pledging winnings, and it was three of my favorite stories. It was cool because we had both reigning champions, Scott Coles and Brad Anderson, talking about the TRF, and I know they've both made donations, and I know that you're also very much on the radar of Robbie Courtney, who so many people were rooting for, and who did an amazing job at the NHC, getting one of his entries up into the semifinals and getting himself a nice cash, and more importantly, inspiring a lot of people along the way. So kudos to you and TRF for having so many quality players in your corner.
Well, I am so gratified and just thankful for you, Pete, for helping us share that message. And then for each and every one of those stars, those folks whose names made the headlines, and all those many horse players who were either striving to be at the NHC or they're grinding it out through those days. Because I have been there in the peanut gallery cheering for my own player. And I know how fun it is and how hard it is and how intense it is. And I was with you every minute of the tournament, Pete. I had texts coming from you and from Seth, and just know that I was there in the wings. And even Drew, your dear colleague at In the Money, asked if I was coming, and I said, "Well, Bobby and I have now got the rule that we don't go unless he's playing, so no pressure." But
well, we got to get him back playing. Yeah, we clearly have to get. I know he's been so busy with the work he does for the buyer team and whatnot. It's been hard to find time for contests. But hearing that now, I'm gonna give him the old arm twist, put him in an arm bar, and see if we can't get him playing so we can get you guys back in Vegas next year. We don't have a ton of time today, and we've got a lot of ground to cover. I wanted to start off with an update on our In the Money webpage. How are we doing? And I understand what we might have. We might finally have a specific horse that we're going to be involved in sponsoring.
Yes, I did. I spent a little time cleaning up. Maybe that's what I was doing while listening to you all last week, was I was working on the webpage just to bring it up to speed for 2020. So I do encourage everyone to go look at the page, which is trfinc.org/players, which you always share. But it shows now, most importantly for me, a huge message of thanks that what we accomplished, what you and all the horse players accomplished in 2019 was an extraordinary number, $15,012.37 to the racehorses of the TRF. amazing, incredible, awesome. That is right there on the website. So please go look at that number and just feel the love that we feel. And so that's on the website. But the thing is, I was traveling last couple weeks ago, right after the Pegasus, to our program in Lowell Correctional Facility in Ocala, Florida. And I met the horse that just jumped off the pasture to me and said, this is the horse we're going to sponsor right out of the gate for 2020. His name is Glorious Gambler. And somehow I just felt that was fitting.
That's fantastic.
Visit the page and you can see pictures of him, and you can look him up on Equibase. He ran six times and won about $25,000. So nice. He's sort of a classic member of our herd, and he's a gray. So there's that.
Fantastic stuff. That's great. Hopefully we're going to continue to add more horses to our own little personal herd within the herd this year. And that's just super duper cool. Give us a little bit more of an update of what you've been working on over at TRF.
Well, so happy to do it. This is going to be a big year for us in Florida. So another shout out to all the horsemen and horse players in the great horsey state of Florida. We will be celebrating our 20th anniversary of the program we have in Ocala. And it is not only special having been doing its magical work for 20 years with horses and humans, but it's really special because it's our only women's program. And so this is the first time I'd visited it, which was just right after the Pegasus. And it was a profoundly impactful experience. I am lucky, and this sounds a little crazy, but I'm lucky in that I visit prisons regularly to see our horses and to show people our program. And they always move me every time. And yet something about this women's program just was a whole nother notch. And our time is limited, but I want to just jump in with one like really impactful story for me about what I saw there. Please. And it's why this program is so important, is because the women in Lowell, they're all women. It's, and they, you know, frankly, for me, I guess it's because they all look just like me. You know, now this wasn't even just there for the grace of God, go I, someone in prison, but this is women. So hearing their stories, and one specific story of a woman who we asked, you know, how is this program impacting you? And she said, this program is giving me hope in the future because my life was so derailed so suddenly. I can't still believe I'm here. And here's how I got here. I was driving down the road one day with my cell phone somewhere, whether it was in her hand or on the seat, and I swerved and my phone went flying down below my seat. I reached to grab the phone that fell behind my under my feet, and I swerved my car and I hit another car and I killed two people.
Oh my goodness.
Totally sobering, shocking, looking this woman in the eye and hearing that happen and realizing how close we all are to that happening to us at any given moment, on any given day. That is not about anything other than the happenstance of life, and so terrifying. And she said, so here I am plucked from my real life that was going just fine, and now I'm here, and I understand why I'm here. I have to live with that every day. But now I have a program that lets me feel like a real person again and feel like I have a real purpose again and that there's actually hope for me when I get back out. You know, I'm in tears listening to this. Oh. It's unbelievable. And there's thousands of people in our country who feel that way, but there's 15 of these women at this program. And I'm not saying that's all why they got there, but realizing that this program is so important to folks whose lives have just been derailed for whatever reason, and having that come from a voice of a woman who looked just like me was really something. It's shaken me pretty much to my core. And I was already, as you know, well on this bandwagon. But I can't wait to tell everyone more stories about the Ocala program as we celebrate the 20th. You see Glorious Gambler, you'll see his beautiful farm. It may be the prettiest of our farms I've seen yet, and they're all pretty gorgeous because they're full of horses. So just know, more on the radar for Ocala. There will be a big event there that will be open to the public. So the folks who are in the region should be keeping an ear out and watching our webpage on the event for all those details. Thank you, Pete.
Well, we definitely have a lot of listeners in Ocala and people who are going to be interested in those details. And it's called the Second Chances Program for a reason, just to underline that, the opportunity to not only give these horses a career after their racing days are done, but to take people who've come upon hard times and provide that spark and that potential to change the direction of their very lives. It is very inspiring work that you do, Kim, and I'm very happy to have you come on the show and talk about it. Speaking of events and things that are coming up, I don't want to let you get out of here without you telling the listeners a little bit something about this Leap of Kindness Day that's coming up at the end of February. What is it? How can folks get involved?
Oh, it's so cool. Thank you, Pete. This is just such a neat thing. And I give all kudos. As far as I can tell at this point, it is the Saratoga Chamber of Commerce that has coined this phrase. So watch for it on Twitter, hashtag Leap of Kindness Day. And the day that the Chamber has cooked up here is that February 29th is this very unusual day. As we all know, this is a year where we have the 29th of February. So it's special in all those sort of, horoscope ways, I suppose. But the point is, it's a day we don't normally have. So the Chamber took this concept and said, let's make it a special day, essentially a day of service. But rather than calling it service, let's call it a kindness day, like an act of kindness day, random acts of kindness. That's a phrase we've all heard. So what we're doing here up in Saratoga as a community is that we're rallying together and saying, let's each find some way to show kindness in an unexpected, unsolicited and non-monetary way. Like, let's show kindness in its fullest capacity. So all around town, if you go to our Saratoga Chamber of Commerce website, you can see all the different groups that are doing different things. So it's a really interesting dynamic, and I know we are hopeful that it will spread beyond Saratoga. It's not meant to be a Saratoga-specific thing. So I tell your listeners to look this up and see if there's a way you can light this spark where you live. But in Saratoga, what we're doing, the TRF, being that we're based right here, are doing three things. We've chosen three organizations that we love in the town that we want to help. So one is our community homeless shelter, which is Shelters of Saratoga. They are doing a can drive. So we are going to be a drop-off point for food. They're doing a canned food drive, so you can drop food off at our office that we will get to Shelters of Saratoga. Then there's also the New York Racetrack Chaplaincy, which we do a lot of collaborating with because they, of course, take care of the horses at the racetrack that are the same horses that we then take when they need to retire to us. So we love the people and the humanity and the backstretch community. So they're doing a hoodie drive. That's what they've asked for. And so we're also going to be a drop-off point for hoodies for folks, and those will especially go to the racetrack folks who work and live up here all year long. There's actually a pretty big community. 32 families live up here in the Saratoga area that work and live full-time in racing. And then the last thing is that we've chosen, our horses wanted to give something to some other horses. That's what we think. So we've chosen the Mounted Police of Saratoga, who we all know. If you come to town, you always see King Tut, who's the big draft horse, and Apollo, who's the standard bred. But we know where they live in a nice way, and we're going to do a day of service for them on the 29th. So those are just some fun things that we thought in our team that we would do to reach out. But I want to wrap that up with an event note, is that we're hosting our first TRF Friends of the Herd Happy Hour, which we do monthly up here. This will be February 27th, so just before Leap of Kindness Day on Thursday. We're hosting our Happy Hour, which is really just a get everyone together, have some fellowship, have some fun. But we're going to do our drives for the can drive and the hoodies there too. So that will be at this wonderful new venue up here, which everyone must visit, called Walt and Whitman Brewing Company, which is in the old Saratogian building. It's really, really awesome how they've redone the space. Coffee shop upstairs, brewery downstairs, great food, fireplace, real fireplace. So we'll be there on the 27th. So listeners who are in town, 5 to 7 on Thursday the 27th, come by, have a beer, meet some horsey people, bring a can of food and a hoodie, and it'll be an awesome Thursday night.
That's awesome. I may try to get back up for that, actually. I'm going up this weekend, and I'm going to check out that space, which is right there on Lake Avenue, if I recall correctly. I sampled, it wasn't beer. I think they're doing a coffee or something that I sampled of at some point this summer before they were open, but it was really proper and good, and it seems like a good thing to check out. And folks who want to get involved or donate to this specifically, can they do that through the Chamber of Commerce website? Where can folks find more information, Kim?
So good question. First of all, the events, just the details of these events will be on our page. There's a tab for events. And so this happy hour event will have all of that. We'll have how to do it. And then we will also have a Leap of Kindness Day page on our website, which will be up by Monday.
So trfinc.org.
Yes, come to us for all things, you know, and we'll direct you to where you need to be.
Perfect. And then a little production note that we would usually do outside the show, but we usually do these on the show here. So we'll just go ahead and do it. I'll let you know to tag me in some social media stuff and happy to send it around.
Absolutely.
Facebook, Twitter, and spread the word. And you'll be there, folks. We'll have a chance to meet you in person as well.
You know, I wouldn't miss a party or a happy hour. Absolutely.
Kim Weir, that's fantastic stuff. We always appreciate your visits and look forward to the next one already. Hopefully it'll be in person. Thank you so much for your time today.
An absolute pleasure. Happy Valentine's Day to all the horse players.
Now we'll send it on to Naomi Tucker, coming to us from Laurel Park.
Leading Maryland jockey Sheldon Russell joins me here today in the grandstand at Laurel Park. And it's a bit of a rainy day, but I think that's also a bit fortunate because that means you were able to join me here today instead of riding work. How are you doing so far?
I'm doing good. Looking forward to this week ahead. We've got some nice races coming up on Saturday. So, you know, it's always nice to be involved. Some really good horses running. So hopefully we can get the week off to a good start. You know, it's not ideal conditions with the rain, but like you said, when it rains like that, sometimes jockeys get the morning off, so I feel fresh and I'm ready to go.
Which of the horses you're riding on Saturday are you most looking forward to?
Well, I'll ride one for my wife, mine not mine. The owners bought him at the sale and he came into Brittany's barn. He's one that I'm mostly looking forward to riding. He's training really well coming into the race, and I'm very excited to ride him on Saturday. He's a horse that we are very excited to get him to the races, and looking forward to having some fun with him this year.
Well, we're going to circle back onto your incredible partnership with your wife, Brittany, but let's start at the beginning. Where were you born?
So I was actually born in Louisiana, in Bossier City. Long story short, my dad tried to come over. My mom and dad were over here, and my mom ended up falling pregnant. So I'm not really sure how long we stayed over here, but I ended up being born in Louisiana, and then we returned back to England. I spent 10 years in England, and I've been over here for about 13 years now.
That's also where the accent stems from, isn't it? So where were you in England?
I spent most of my time in West London, in a little town called Middlesex in Norfolk. I went to high school there. Coming to the end of my high school years, I ended up venturing up to Newmarket, and finished high school, I went to the British Racing School. So I spent some time in Newmarket. Mostly remember growing up in Middlesex with my mom and two sisters.
Well, for those of you that aren't aware, Newmarket is basically the heart of racing in England. It's where it all stems from and one of the best places to be and to learn as a jockey. And you mentioned the British Racing School. I went to the British Racing School as well, the 9-week foundation course. How did you find that?
I really enjoyed my time over there. Like you said, it's one of the best horse racing foundations. I mean, you could go to the school and not know anything, and by the end of your time there, whether it be 9 or 10 weeks, I can't really remember, but you'll leave that school knowing everything you sort of need to know to get on your feet. It's a great school, great jockey coaches and everything. I wish, you know, to be honest with you, I wish they had something like that over here to get the younger crowd interested in horse racing.
Who were your teachers and what are some of the memories you have from being there?
Jockey coach was Richard Perham. He was really good. We still keep in touch right now. It's nice to see every time, like, I have a big day here at Laurel, he'll give me a shout out on Twitter. I know they keep track of my career, so that's nice. I've still got some friends in England that we keep in touch with. Some are still jockeys, some are just exercise riding. I've made some lifelong friends, and I'm glad to see that we're still speaking.
How old were you when you were at the British Racing School?
I want to say I was 18 years old. You know, I was fresh out of high school, so I was still a young kid, and I ended up, after I finished the British Racing School, the 9-week course, I started working for a trainer, Chris Dwyer, and he gave me a couple of rides, and I ended up coming over to America to work for Michael Dickinson for 3 months. So that's how it all started, and that's how we ended up being over here. I actually ended up, 3 months turned into 2 years. So I ended up working on the farm for 2 years, and I just sort of took a little break and readjusted and got used to the American racing, working for Michael on the farm.
Did you ever have any winners in England?
I had one winner at Catrick. It was an apprentice race going 1.5 miles. It was a great day, given it being my first winner, but it was such a great experience. And looking back now, it just went so fast. I just remember that it was at Catrick going 1.5 miles on the grass. Like, the horse's name was Rare Coincidence. He ended up, you know, he was a great ride, I just remember him running off with me the whole race. It was just one of those where I just had to get into the gate and just hang on.
For a mile and a half.
Yes, a mile and a half. And I can't remember if I pulled him up or not. But I just remember he was just, you know, the best horse in the race. And, you know, it was a great day.
Well, we don't get too many turf mile and a half races. Not at Laurel at the moment, anyway. Was there anything that you took back from your riding days in England when you came over to the US, or how have you changed coming here as a jockey?
You know, in England you get to ride at so many different racetracks at so many different distances. Like I said, I spent a lot of time at Dickinson's Farm, and I remember when I first started at Dickinson's Farm, he'd always send me to the racetrack to get the horses gate card. So I was going to Delaware, you know, two or three times a week, just getting gate cards. I was getting to work with jockeys. Like when they came to the farm, I remember it was Joe Rocca Jr., Ramon Dominguez, Rosen and Pravnik. So every time they came to farm to work horses, I was always, you know, working with them as their workmates. And, you know, those three people were very influential. They were always giving me, you know, hints and things like helping me out. So, you know, just little by little, the journey to where I've got to now, you know, I just try to take as much and learn as much as I could early on. But definitely my two years spending at Michael's was influential, and I felt like that's where I learned the most.
When did you move, and how did you end up in Maryland?
So I stayed there for 2 years, and Michael was taking a break from training, and he was more focusing on the Tapeda synthetic track. So he sort of downsized, and he ended up stopping training for a little bit on the farm. So he had helped me. He gave me my first 5 rides in America. I had one at Pimlico, one at Colonial. I had my first ride here at Laurel Park. Had one at Monmouth, and after I'd rode my 5th race, he had helped sort me out an agent with Tracy Campola. She was my agent at the time, and she was getting ready to go to Colonial Downs, so I just ended up packing my stuff and I went down to Colonial Downs with Tracy Campola. And she sort of, you know, she showed me the ropes, she introduced me to a lot of trainers, and just that's sort of how we got going, really.
And your career here has been successful, but not without injuries. How did you come back after, I believe, 2016, 2017, when there was a fair few times that you were sidelined?
Yeah, there's been several injuries along the way, but, you know, just taking the time off, the most needed time off with the injuries and healing up the right way. You know, the longest one was probably when I broke my shoulder. You know, that ended up taking 8.5 months to heal, but, you know, knock on wood, I'm back healthy now. We had a good year last year. You know, I couldn't be more happy with the way things are going. I'm very grateful to the trainers around here that give me another chance and for putting me on these life horses, because, to be honest, you need life horses. You know, it picks you up. It gives you a lot of confidence from sitting on the sidelines for such a long time that, you know, your first day back and you see that first overnight and you've got 3 or 4 and it's for, you know, some of the top trainers. So, you know, very lucky to be in the situation I'm in and to have the support from the trainers and the owners around here. So it makes my job a lot easier to come back, especially when you're coming back and you're winning a race straight off the bat.
So you were at the British Racing School and you were refusing to tell me your stories, but now I found out that there actually are a few stories. What are some of the fun memories you had up there?
How do I say this in a nice way? You're just sort of young kids at that stage. You know, you're 17 years old, and you're pretty much in like a prison with, you know, girls and boys that all want to do the same thing as you. You don't get to get out much. You pretty much stay there 7 days a week. I think you got to leave the school like one day a week. And
on the Sunday, right? You have time.
And
you're
up early. You get up to mischief. You get up to no good. You find ways to get yourself in trouble. But looking back, those were the best 9 weeks of my life. You know, I wouldn't have changed anything. I met some great friends and some great coaches along the way. But, you know, we took shortcuts. There was ways that we found to not get into trouble and still get away with it. But it's a great school, and anyone that was interested in getting into horse racing that was over there, even the people I've met over here, the younger generation, like I always tell them, like, if you could go over there, go over there. And that's how I got started. So if you wanted to be a jockey or an exercise rider, it's a great starting point.
Well, they also drive with the van next to you with walkie-talkies and filming you and giving you instructions, or that's what they did when I was there. Did they do that when you were there?
Yeah, it was sort of the same sort of setup. Every time you got to work the horses, you know, the jockey coach would drive right next to the horse. You know, they'd videotape you, and then at the end of the day, you know, you'd go into the classroom and you'd get to watch your videos, and you were seeing what you were doing wrong. Most of the time the horses were running off with you, so there wasn't really anything you could do but just watch or bow your head and just be embarrassed because everyone would be laughing
but
at you.
But there's the big brick solid wall at the end of the gallop.
Yeah, I think they used to call it the cheese grater. So if the horse didn't stop, it was either hit the wooden cheese grater or just jump off. And there was a couple of times where, you know, we couldn't control the horse and the horse would just make a big left-hand turn and just head back to the barn. You know, we took our first couple of falls there on the wood chips.
They go left and you go straight?
Yes. No one ever cleared the wood the fence at the thing at the end of the gallop. She sort of just hit it, like I said, or you just wheeled around. Good times, looking back. Very, very good times.
There was also a grass field at the back that people used to skate to. Was that a thing when you were there?
Probably after my time. Probably have to ask you that. Things have changed, obviously.
My year was probably quite mischievous, or however you say it.
I just remember, like, on Friday nights when, you know, when the jockey coaches and the teachers all went to bed early or whatever, I knew that that was when you got in trouble the most. You know, you'd sneak out your rooms, you'd go into your friends' rooms. You know, we were on lockdown, so we were young. Like I said, we were young and we were looking to get into trouble. And sometimes we got away with it and sometimes we didn't. If we didn't, there was consequences you had to pay the next morning. Whether it was sweeping the barns or doing tack or whatever, they found a way to sort of keep you in line and keep you humble.
Well, and they had the muck sacks, no wheelbarrows allowed. Yes. So for everyone in this day and age, we have either wheelbarrows or even mechanical, you know, machines to muck out. But at the time at the British Racing School, they'd make you have a sack, put everything on it and put it on your back. So you'd smell.
Yes,
the time.
And you can imagine that, you know, being 17 years old and they run such a tight ship there. So you had to keep them stalls immaculate. So, you know, as a young kid looking back, you're trying to put as much of the, you know, the dirty stuff into the muck sack, and you weren't really thinking about, once you'd cleaned the stall, whether you were going to pick it up or not. And there was a specific way you had to sort of carry it. We would roll it up and then you'd have to get, you know, I remember asking like a couple of my friends, you're going to just get it on my back and I'll get it to the muck pit. That was never the case. Once it was on your back, you were either going over it or spilling everywhere. But you know, those were the days, and you can imagine the middle of the winter time, your hands are froze, your feet were cold and pouring of rain. And those muck pits, you know, them sacks, they would get heavier and heavier. But good times, yeah.
Fun memories.
Fun memories.
Did you ever imagine being located in the US when you were in England doing the British Racing School?
To be honest with you, no. I was happy with the way things were going. I just started riding. I was just getting going. You know, I'd had, 70 rides or just under 70 rides. And it's a bit tougher in England, the opportunities, because there's so many good riders. And you need to sort of be associated with the good barn to get those good rides. But back then, I was just getting started. So I wasn't really thinking big things. I was just sort of trying to ride a 20-to-1 shot every day or every other day. I was ready to drive 3 hours just to ride the last race of the day. I hadn't really thought about being successful or making this as a career. I was just happy to be riding the horses. And it wasn't until I came over here and worked for the first 3 months for Michael Dickinson that I thought, you know, this is something I could get used to. You know, I really enjoyed my time over here. He was good to me. He put me to work. I felt like I matured a lot while I was working on the farm. And that's when I really wanted to stay over here and give this a go.
Talking about enjoying your time over here, your lovely wife just came to check up on you before. She found us in the grandstand. You two have made a phenomenal couple in terms of your strike rates. I think at the moment about 30% win strike rate, 60%, 61% in the money, which is incredible. I'm assuming there's a lot of racing being talked about at home at the dinner table. How do you make that work?
It just works. A lot of people ask me that, but I just, you know, I always answer the same way and I just say it just works. I mean, she has a passion for horse racing. She's doing a great job managing her horses and training them. You know, ideally I didn't want to marry a trainer. It just happened to work with Brittany. You know, she does a great job. She allows me to get on the horses in the morning, so I feel very comfortable in our ride for in the afternoon. I feel like we're on the same page. It's a working relationship that works. She has a great team behind her. It's a good barn. Every now and again, we'll work horses together. I mean, that's something that you don't see every day, you know? So she gets a feel of the horse. I get a feel of the horse. So when it comes to race day, there isn't a whole lot of instructions she's given me into the paddock. Like I said, I'm comfortable. I've been on them in the mornings. I know what she wants in the race. When she gets a new horse in, I'm right there on the couch next to her while we're watching TV or a replay of the race. So, you know, I know what she's thinking in the back of her head when she gets that horse into the barn, what she wants to try, whether it be like, you know, taking the blinkers off or trying it on the turf or shortening it up. So 24/7 I know what she's thinking, so that when it comes to the afternoon, I hope to not make any mistakes, keep riding winners for her, and making that barn happy, keeping that barn happy, should I say. But let's be real, you know, sometimes the horses have to lose. Sometimes I'm going to get the horses in trouble, but at the end of the day, when we go home, nothing is mentioned, because she knows that, you know, ideally I don't want to get in traffic, or, you know, I don't want the plan to not work. But this is racing. As long as the horse comes back to the barn the next after the race and is still feeling good, then we'll go back to the drawing board, and we will, you know, leave it up to her. But she's doing a great job. You know, we have some nice horses in the barn this year, so I'm very excited to see what her stable does this year.
It's worth a note. I actually saw you guys working a pair together last week, I believe it was, and you just had a little girl. So props to Brittany for getting back on a horse and working one with you. And your little girl, Edie, I believe, is she a little bit like your mascot? I know you have her on your hat silks.
Yeah, I mean, she's very special to us. It's our first kid. She comes out with Brittany and me every morning. She loves being at the barn. It just, you know, it works. You know, Brittany took some time off, obviously, because she was pregnant from getting on horses. But before then, you would have seen, you know, Brittany was very hands-on. She liked to gallop her own horses. When we had horses to match up and work together, she would always want to be working them with me, or because that's how it all started. You know, that's how we got going. We were, you know, working the horses together, or even if it was just galloping. But she's got another great exercise rider. Well, she's got two, you know, Val and Jen do a great job. But now Brittany's starting to feel better, and Edie's getting a little bit bigger. She's starting to get on 2 or 3 a day. It's something that she loves doing. So for her to, you know, pull the irons up and crank the girth up and drop that one to the rail with me the other day was brought back a lot of good memories. And, you know, the work just went as smooth as can be. And she had a big smile on the gallop out. So that was very nice to see.
You've been in Maryland as part of Jockey County for quite a long time. How have you seen it change over the last, let's say, half a decade?
Yeah, it's really nice to see the changes they've made. I mean, they've put so much money into the grandstand and accommodating the fans, so that when they do come to the races, you know, they're comfortable. They can come here and have a good time. I always say to people that haven't been here for such a long time, just, you know, come out and see the renovations they've done. You know, it's very, very kid friendly now to come out here on the weekends. They put in great show here on like Saturdays and Sundays in the summer, where they, you know, encourage the kids to come out. We do the pony rides, or, you know, the face painting or whatever. But it's really nice to see. You know, I feel like it's going in the right direction. Huge props to them. You know, it's very nice.
Are there any things that you think could be better here in Maryland in terms of, you know, what we're looking at, the horse racing industry as a whole, or even just here at Laurel Park?
As a jockey and as a fan, I think it's moving in the right direction. Ideally, you'd like to see what they're going to do with the whole Pimlico and the Preakness situation, because that's something that's always, that I'm sort of getting asked about. Will they move the Preakness to Laurel? You know, if we could just find an answer to that, whether it was going to stay at Pimlico and they were going to do the renovations or whatever they needed to do. But I feel like the racetrack itself is, I'd love to see the Breeders' Cup here 1 year.
Do you think it would be a good idea to have the Preakness here, or you think it's better suited to stay in Pimlico?
I don't know. I feel like we're, to have year-round racing here at Laurel would be great, but on the other side of that, I could see why people would want to keep it at Pimlico and the history and all of that. But you know, I have an answer for both of those sides. So I'll just leave it to them, and we'll just adapt to whatever they choose.
Talking a little bit about the Laurel Park track itself, going to sneak in a bit of a betting question here for all the betting listeners. What kind of angle or tip would you give them when handicapping the cards here? Better it be on the dirt or when the turf starts again later in the season?
There's so many different angles. You know, obviously now today with the track being a little bit wet, sometimes you'll see, even if you watch a couple of the early races, you know, speed tends to hold a little bit when they have the track this tight and it's wet like this. But every now and again you'll see a closer close into it. So it's just important to watch the early races, see how the track conditions are playing, especially on the turf. You know, early on in the summer you'll see speed is very deadly on the turf, especially going the sprints. But later on, as the turf gets a little bit softer and a bit used, you'll see that they'll start making closing moves. So I think every day is different. It's a very fair racetrack. A lot of us jockeys like riding on it. Obviously, it's not fun in the slav if you have a horse that's coming from 20 lengths out of it. But, you know, those rainy days are very few and far between. So, you know, we'll take it and we'll move on. But sometimes, as a betting angle, if you were to ask me one thing, I'd say, like, the off track is completely different to a fast track. So if you see that a horse doesn't like the off track and he's the betting favorite, like, that would be one angle I'd say, you know, like, he's shown in the past he doesn't like the off track. So if he were to run bad or she were to run bad, I would just scratch it off the list and give him another chance or her another chance on a fast track.
Looking at the way you jockeys ride the fast and the off track, it seems that during when the track's off, you seem to move away a little bit more from the rail. Is that because there's a bit more water logging up there, or what's the reasoning behind that? It seems to be a natural thing. Everyone just fans a bit wider when it's wet.
And you'll see that at other racetracks around here. I don't know if sometimes the water just sits a little bit close to the rail and just makes it a little bit more deeper. But like I said, every day is different. Sometimes you'll see the rail is lightning fast and you'll see all the horses glued to the rail. But, you know, ideally, in my experience, I feel like if it's a little bit wet, just to come off the rail is a great angle or a great move.
I don't want to let you go without asking this question. Perhaps I should be asking Jerry O'Dwyer and not you, but I'm still going to. You've ridden Schottky in two of his five starts. He broke his maiden with you atop. He's planned, well, they're looking at going to the Fountain of Youth. I do believe that is the same weekend as the Saudi Cup is on, which means that Louis Saez is going to be in Saudi Arabia with maximum security. Does that open up a possibility for you renewing the partnership?
You know, me and Jerry are friends on and off the racetrack. We actually played a pool last week. There was a couple of us, we went down the road and played some shots and pool. You know, in that situation, if that was to come up and that is all going to be true, you know, I'd leave it to Jerry. Like I said, I've rode the horse twice, but at the same time, you know, that's his and the owner's decision to choose the jockey. I wouldn't want to step on anyone's toes or beg to ride him back. Obviously, I'd love to ride him back. He's a very cool horse to ride. He's a very cool horse to work in the morning. But, you know, Jerry's doing a great job. I just leave it up to him, you know. But yeah, let's be real. I'd love another chance, you know.
So you and Jerry actually have a bit of history together, because you mentioned at the barn when I was there the other day that you guys rode in the same races.
Yeah, a lot of people don't realize that. Me and Jerry actually rode together in England. Funny enough, we both had the same agents. Agents in England are allowed to have way more than two jockeys, so Jerry still had the apprenticeship. I was just starting, so Jerry was way ahead of me. He had rode several winners, so he was sort of just coming to the end of his apprenticeship when I was just starting. He was a very good rider in England. As you can see in the mornings when you see him, he's still very skinny, but he's very tall, so I'm guessing, or I know so, that he struggled a lot with the weight. He was a very good rider, so I've known Jerry for a long time. And Fergal Lynch as well, you know, I remember Fergal. Fergal was a very good jockey, still is a good jockey, but in England, I mean, he was one of the top when I had first started. So, you know, to come to the jocks room here in the afternoon and have Fergal sitting right next to me is kind of, it just shows you what a small world this is, because, I mean, he was a jockey I looked up to, I still do. In England, he rode for some really big trainers. I mean, he rode in the derbies, he went to Dubai, he's won some huge races, and to know that Ferg is sitting right there next to me, it's kind of cool, you know. You know, we're friends as well. It's something that we can laugh and joke about. Me, Fergal and Jerry, all at the same racetrack, what a small world.
Very small world indeed. And you highlighted the jockey colony here in Maryland is incredibly competitive. And thank you so much for your time. If we're very lucky to get to know every one of you and seeing you succeed on the track.
Appreciate it. Thank you so much.
And that's going to do it for this edition of the show. Hope you enjoyed listening as much as I enjoyed recording and producing this one. We're going to thank our guests, starting with Frank McGowey, Kim Weir, of course, then Naomi Tucker coming in to speak to Sheldon Russell. Good stuff all the way around. Thanks also to our partners, including 10 Strike Racing and the Thoroughbred Retirement Foundation. But thanks most of all to you, the listeners, for sticking with us and making these shows so much fun to do. This show's been a production of In the Money Media. In the Money Media's business manager is Drew Coatney. Our chief creative officer is Jonathan Kinchin. I'm Peter Thomas Fornital. May you win all your photos.